it's really important that we understand that serotype. But that's what makes the development of a commercial vaccine very difficult. If you're a pharmaceutical company looking to invest in the development of a vaccine, it's a very long process, a very expensive process. And how would we choose which streps to throw into a vaccine? Because what might be in a herd that Tom is dealing with in one part of his practice could be very different than a herd in a different part of his practice. And so the beauty of the autogenous regulations in the USDA, 9 CFR is where all the regulations are written. This allows us to have some of this flexibility and the adaptability to select the isolates that are relevant to the herd that we're working with.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Hello, and welcome to the Swine It podcast show. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and I'd like to introduce my two guests today, Dr. Tom Petznik. Tom is a private practice veterinarian at Veterinary Health Services in Omaha, Nebraska, and Dr. Steve Tusana. Steve is the director of the swine business unit with Vaccinova. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tara. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Great. Well, so Tom and I have been on this podcast before together, but Steve is new to the show. So let's have both of you just give yourself a brief introduction to our audience as we get to know you. Why don't you start, Steve?
Sure. Again, my name is Steve Tusana. I'm the director of the swine business unit at Vaccinova. I've been with this company now for about 3 years. Prior to that, I was in technical service with Boehringer Ingelheim and private practice with the Swine Vet Center in Minnesota. My training is at the University of Minnesota. I did both my veterinary degree there and my PhD in epidemiology there, and currently reside in Minnesota.
Great. Thank you. Well, welcome to our show, Steve.
Thank you.
And Tom, go ahead. You tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I was a 95 graduate from Kansas State University. My first love was to do dairy work, but then the practice that I went into, I replaced the swine guy and very quickly found out that I enjoyed that as much as anything. Just really appreciated the ability to look at things from a population standpoint, not just from an individual standpoint. And then I've been practicing probably since 96, in almost exclusive swine. I do some cattle and sheep and goat work as well, just to keep my brain diversified. And I'm working on my master's at Iowa State, hoping to finish that up here in July. And of course, Tara, you and I first met back in Oklahoma many years ago, and work together and have had that relationship since. Appreciate that.
Why risk it? Your herd may have antigenic gaps that are not being covered by the products currently available. Custom-made vaccines provide a unique advantage in that they can be formulated to a herd's specific bacterial and viral needs. Choose the exact isolates, adjuvant, packaging, and size you need with Vaccinova for a vaccine formulated to your needs. Find out more by visiting us at vaccinova.us.com. That's vaccinova.us.com. Why risk it? Your herd may have antigenic gaps that are not being covered by the products currently available. Custom-made vaccines provide a unique advantage in that they can be formulated to a herd's specific bacterial and viral needs. Choose the exact isolates, adjuvant, packaging, and size you need with Vaccinova for a vaccine formulated to your needs. Find out more by visiting us at vaccinova.us.com. That's vaccinova.us.com.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for being on our show again. So today we have, a topic that we all know well if you've been in the swine industry, Streptococcus suis. And we're going to talk about how to diagnose it and manage it in your swine herd. So Tom, why don't you start us off and just tell us, give us a description of Strep Suis and the signs and symptoms that you see in a pig herd.
Strep Suis has been one that I've dealt with ever since I started with pigs back in 96. Obviously, we learned a lot about it in vet school, but we've learned so much more about it since then. Classic presentation that most people put with strep, being a gram-positive bacteria, is the meningitis that it'll create, or we might call them downers, we might call them CNS pigs, we might call them, recumbent, whatever. And especially when that recumbency and that paddling that goes on with that also creates like a nystagmus, because there's certain things that can cause that pig to go down other than just a meningitis, which is also another classic presentation of strep, which would be arthritis in the joints. So being a polycerositis type of bacteria causing disease, we see all those serous surfaces, we see fibrin formation that later, unfortunately, proceeds to causing some adhesions in those pigs, whether it's in their chest cavity or in their abdominal cavity. And then I think what that ends up relating to is we also get chronic type of symptoms even after the acute form of it has shown up that everybody's familiar with. We get endocarditis that causes congestive heart failure, and again those adhesions can start to create issues within the organ systems of the body as well. So that darn bacteria has been around for a long time and continues to still be one of the top two things that we fight from a bacterial standpoint every year.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Steve, why don't you go into, getting a diagnosis of the pathogen? You know, so what would be what you see coming into the lab, or how would you diagnose it, sort it out from other pathogens, right, that might be out there?
Absolutely. So, fortunately, the diagnosis of strep, in most cases, is fairly straightforward. Usually begins with tissue collection, necropsy, and this kind of thing. Generally, I like to recommend selecting pigs from the general population that otherwise haven't been in a sick and chronic pen and treated multiple times with different injectable antibiotics. So pull in pigs that are just acutely ill with the signs of the disease that Tom has described is generally our best way to go. And so sacrificing those pigs, then performing complete necropsy and tissue collection. Those tissues can go off to a diagnostic laboratory of your choice, where they'll conduct the various bacteriological tests on different tissues or surfaces, these kinds of things. I think oftentimes another really important part of the diagnosis is confirming what we're seeing on bacteriology with some histopathology as well. So while it might be tempting when we're in a hurry to just take some swabs and send those in, it's also really nice to have those tissue sections so that they can be looked at under the microscope and examined for signs of inflammation and these kinds of things. Depending on what direction you're going and the reason for doing the initial diagnostic workup, if it is something that we're moving towards the development of an autogenous vaccine, you know, some further identification and classification of those bacteria is usually justified. And there's a number of different methods that are out there, but in general, we would talk about whole genome sequencing today as being one of the real gold standards as far as accurately and quickly identifying the serotype of strep that you're dealing with.
Yeah, great. And we'll get into a little bit of the molecular diagnostic part of strep here in a bit. I want to go back to you, Tom. Any tips or tricks out in the field for picking those pigs, or getting the right one to the lab when you want to really isolate and focus in on Streptococcus suis?
Yeah, I think the most important is sample selection. You know, as far as, and I don't mean the sample necessarily of the right tissues, that's important as well, but actually finding the right pigs to use. Steve alluded to it, making sure that they're not treated pigs. I wouldn't say that I've never isolated those types of organisms I'm looking for in a treated pig, but it certainly does hurt us. Even if it doesn't keep the strep from being cultured, there could be background players like Glacerella parasuis that can be at play there. And so those can be affected too. And it's important to know everything that's going on in those pigs, whether it's just strep or other things involved. So picking out that pig, it's usually the one that the producer says, oh my gosh, I can save that pig with a treatment. But unfortunately, those makes the best candidates. We can't have the pig that's been down for 3 or 4 days and finally needs to be euthanized. We need to pick good, fresh tissues, getting your eyes on it. Again, making sure that you're dealing with a meningitis, although strep can also be an arthritis. And then collecting multiple samples is really critical. I'll most of the time now, I'll just send in the whole head, get it cooled down right away so that the lab can very aseptically do all those testings and collect the histopath and such. I'll do joint taps and put that directly into swab media. Or at times, if I don't have the right materials, I'll send in the whole leg with just making sure the joint hasn't been cut into that I'm concerned with. And then also doing some swabs of the fibrin in multiple areas so that you make sure you get everything along with it. So picking the right pig and then being thorough with your diagnostic workup and all the tissues that you send in is important.
Yeah, thank you for that. So in my experience, sometimes, don't give up either. Occasionally you didn't pick the right pig or maybe something happened with the storage or, keeping your tissues cold or whatever it is, getting to the lab and you didn't isolate the pathogen that you wanted to, or you have some suspicion that maybe, you didn't get the one that's really causing the systemic disease. So don't give up. It can be a little bit challenging and it might take a couple of times in a herd to actually get the isolate that you feel is representative of what you're seeing in the herd. So no, great advice. So let's stick with things in the barn about strep real quick, and then we'll jump into, how do we prevent it, right? So what causes some of these strep suis outbreaks? And you hear all sorts of different levels, right? Some strep, some pigs that just have, like you mentioned, Tom, some joint issues and you kind of looking at a fallout pin and there's just some that you suspect have strep. But then sometimes you get an outbreak where you walk into a barn and there's a lot of pigs that are down with meningitis. So what's the difference there? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think the big key that I've learned, and more recently probably doing some other work looking at tonsils, is the tonsils are an amazing ecosystem, and really one that's been somewhat defined in pigs. But at the same time, I think there's going to be more and more that we learn in the next several years about how important that is. Well, the tonsils are a very good place for certain organisms that like to house there. They actually thrive there. There, and one of those is strep. And so we're looking at an ecosystem of strep within that tonsil that can be released at any time. And things are changing in there at times. Bacteria can be modifying and adapting to their environment and to what the pig status is. And so everything we can do that to prevent stressors in these pigs' lives that cause an imbalance. So whether it's because of the immunosuppression that the stressor happens to be, whether it's infectious or non-infectious, obviously we know the infectious ones being strep would definitely be a co-infector with PRRS. We see it increase with flu. Anything that becomes an infectious type of stressor on them becomes important. And then even in clean herds, quote unquote, that we would classify, it's very simple with the wrong ventilation or with the wrong stressors going on within the barn to cause that strep to become a problem again as well. And so, having that good program that from top to bottom with a vaccination strategy, with a health management strategy, and probably even more important is the environmental strategy that you use in order to keep those pigs from breaking with strep is really the key aspects that we look at.
Yeah, exactly. So you can have management stressors, crowding, you know, ventilation, or you can have pathogen stressors, right? That, you know, what you mentioned about the tonsil is a good reminder that strep's kind of there, and we do something to make it angry, or something happens to the pig, and that's when it's released or expressed. So, Steve, jump into the barn with us and tell us, you know, how would you manage a strep outbreak in the barn?
Yeah, you know, this is always kind of the difficult question of this. You know, in most of these circumstances today, when people are in the barn, it's, you know, what do we do, right? We've got pigs that are down, dying. We've got mortality that's getting to a level that we're uncomfortable with. And usually associated with that is going to be some sort of an antibiotic therapy, and finding one that, you know, these organisms are susceptible to and that we're comfortable using is all up to, you know, the veterinary judgment there. These situations, though, are not what we want to keep doing long term. And so then the effort, I believe, really should start looking at shifting towards, well, how do we prevent it and how do we manage it and, you know, not have this be part of the issue? These outbreak situations, from our perspective in the development of vaccines, are great opportunities for us to begin collecting that library of strep isolates that we can then use into the future as we start looking towards the development of the vaccine. And so, you know, we take that time, we go through all the good diagnostics, you know, that we've just kind of outlined, and try to build up a sense of the variety of isolates that are there, perhaps the other pathogens that are there along with strep that we may want to build into a preventative type of a vaccine program for that flow or for that herd or whatever we're working with.
Right, exactly. So, you know, what I heard you say is a short-term plan, right, for treatment and therapy from the disease that's going on to help the pigs, but then also having a plan long-term for prevention and or getting this herd so that they're protected from these strep outbreaks.
Yep, absolutely.
So, Tom, when you're thinking about vaccine out in the field, so you've got a herd that's you've been dealing with a strep outbreak with them. What's the first thing that you do when you're thinking about a vaccine to help prevent strep in your client's herds?
One of the first things that I do is to remind the client how much money they're spending on antibiotics to be able to you know, prevent this problem or to stop the problem. It's not a good prevention. And what I've seen over the years is that if in uncontrolled or poorly immune prepared pigs or flows, we'll treat them for strep and then we pull it off and then it seems like it comes back and we're treating it again. And so first of all, saying to them, hey, there is another solution here. A lot of producers still can remember back to when I was first coming out of school, and that was in the mid-90s, and we had some people that would use strep vaccine and say, oh, it was the greatest thing ever, and we'd have others that would say, that's the biggest waste of money that I've ever had. And so kind of training them to say, hey, these diagnostic labs, the companies that are creating autogenous vaccines, like where Steve's at with Vaxinova, they're developing technology to make these more reliable, and more often than not, I can always remove the needle when it comes to vaccination. So making sure that we have that full library of isolates for Steve to have his team work through and you know, give us the virulence factors. You know, we've done a couple different projects with some producers that weren't using strep vaccine before, and it's really worked well. Every once in a while, we get that one that's lying in the weeds, like the leopard waiting to pounce. And once we control one of them, then it comes out. And I blame that on the tonsils, you know, I mean, and that ecosystem that goes on there. And all of a sudden, we start to create some balance the other way against a pathogenic strain, and another pathogenic strain may be lying there as well. And so really the biggest thing that I really focus on is again, back to those good diagnostics, convincing the producer that, you know, yes, we're gonna prevent this with vaccine. I always like to start for sure with the sow herd being vaccinated, But time and time again, we're proven that helps a lot, especially within the farrowing house. But, you know, I just recently looked at SDRS data from the last 5 years at Iowa State. And what they would show is that still to this day, the number one area that we have strep problems is in the nursery. So protecting that piglet, we've found some ways that by giving them shots at processing and then giving them a booster at weaning, we can do that, especially if we put in that sow piece that we don't see the problems.
In swine production, performance is everything. At Lupta, we know your success depends on measurable results. That's why our feed additives go beyond improving palatability. They're scientifically designed to enhance feed intake, support animal well-being, and drive optimal growth. From the weaning transition to periods of stress, our solutions deliver what matters most: resilient animals, improved performance, and a stronger bottom line. Backed by decades of expertise and a commitment to innovation, Lupta is redefining swine nutrition. Because when your herd thrives, so does your business. Lupta, create, connect, inspire. Visit lupta.com to learn more.
In the farrowing house. So taking that knowledge, making sure we have everything that we want, like I just mentioned, the Glacerella and the other things, because I just had a recent one that they were certainly, it was all strep, but there was more Glacerella than there was strep. So making sure that when that producer says, okay, I'm putting my faith in you, Tom, that vaccines actually work now, that we've got the whole arsenal there so that they get a good outcome and don't say, no, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, I think that was really great. I agree with you that we have some more molecular tools and some better diagnostics than we did, you know, 20 years ago. And so I think getting that right isolate is the key to that vaccine. So, Steve, what about commercial vaccines? Why is strep, why are there not commercial vaccines available for strep? And why do we have to go to the autogenous route?
Yeah, good question. So strep's a bit of a unique organism. One of the things that we know about it is there's 35 different serotypes of strep that have been described. And what we know about the different serotypes and how they interact with the immune system, it's very, very specific to the serotype that is in the pigs. Meaning, in general, we would expect very little cross protection between the different serotypes that are possible. And as Tom alluded, you know, in some of these cases, it's kind of like peeling back the layers of the onion. And so sometimes we do a good job of controlling the first and most obvious strep, and that allows something else within that ecosystem of endemic bacteria in these pigs or in these populations of pigs to rise to the surface. And so, you know, it's really important that we understand that serotype. But that's what makes the development of a commercial vaccine very difficult. If you're a pharmaceutical company looking to invest in the development of a vaccine, it's a very long process, a very expensive process. And how would we choose which strep to throw into a vaccine? Because what might be in a herd that Tom is dealing with in one part of his practice could be very different than a herd in a different part of his practice. And so the beauty of the autogenous regulations in the USDA, 9 CFR is where all the regulations are written. This allows us to have some of this flexibility and the adaptability to select the isolates that are relevant to the herd that we're working with. Along with that, in the autogenous regulations, we're able to manipulate several different components of that vaccine as well. So not only can we manipulate which antigens, so which bugs we're putting in there, we can control how much of that we're representing into that vaccine. And then the other half of the bottle is really an adjuvant, which is the engine that drives the immune response towards the vaccine. And the companies that are in the business of manufacturing autogenous vaccines certainly would have an access to a few different adjuvants within their company. And not unlike the others, Vaxinova would have, you know, access to several different adjuvants that we would use under different circumstances. Maybe it's just a very straightforward, uncomplicated strep vaccine. Maybe it's something where we're throwing in other gram-negative organisms, or where we have found some Paracuis or Actinobacillus suis. Some of these things will drive the way that we would formulate these vaccines. So we really, you know, while a commercial vaccine would be the nicest, that we could just go to the shelf and pull it off the shelf and get out to the barn. Unfortunately, with strep, it's just not possible because of all those different serotypes. And it really leads us down that path of it being truly a target for an autogenous vaccine development.
Great. Thank you for that. And I think it was a good description of why strep is a little unique, and we have to, try a little harder. And when it comes to not as easy as just pulling it off the shelf. So Tom, tell me, when you've gone down the route with your clients to, work with Steve to manufacture a strep vaccine, how do you know if it's working? How do we evaluate whether it's working in the herd and whether it's, you know, worth that extra cost and effort?
The big thing that I'll work on is, again, setting the expectations that, you know, make sure that they understand that, number one, population diseases are how the dynamics work within a sow herd and a nursery finish flow. And so don't let the first group that comes through determine whether you like strep vaccine or not. So really setting those expectations. What I like to do, my preference is we start by vaccinating sows and piglets. And that's especially true if the main problem is in the nursery, because it's going to take a little while for the sow vaccine to start to kick in, and to affect things in farrowing, because we give that, you know, four and two, maybe five and three weeks before they farrow with an initial and a booster. And so we have several weeks there where they're having strep problems. So I always like to see how the piglet flow does, up until which time those sows farrow. So we'll actually go in and we'll be able to see, first, the effects of just vaccinating piglets. We'll also see the effects of then when piglets and sows are vaccinated. Very rarely do I have somebody say, things are really, really going well now. Maybe we can dial back on the piglet vaccination. We'll usually then, if we need to, we'll create about a four week to 6 week block where they get to look at pigs that only got vaccinated off of sows. But I basically say, hey, for up front, we need to make what I would call a 6 month commitment to be able to really turn this to see not just the effects that it has in your farrowing house, not just the effects that it has in your nursery, but also how it affects your finisher in the long term. Because remember, we can still get some of those chronic kind of lesions from it. And are those acceptable or not? So I really like to see the full program go through for at least 6 months. We're measuring mortality. We're measuring treatments, we're measuring morbidity. And I'm not going to tell you that every producer is like going to document every last thing that can be reported in a study, but they know. And so they know the impact. And then really the big one is just the reduction in antibiotic usage that we end up with. That one stuck out, especially with mass medications. That one stuck out more than anything is when you're treating nursery pigs in the later phases of the nursery, especially, and you're treating everybody, it doesn't take long to pay for autogenous vaccine.
Yeah, very good comments on, you know, you have to be patient in 6 months, I think, at minimum, to really make those decisions, because it takes a bit of time for that, immunity, as you mentioned, to develop in the sow herd, and then for you actually to have enough groups and enough time to get those pigs all the way through the end of the nursery and evaluate. It's really the same data that you're looking at every day in the barn, right? Mortality and treatments and, closeout results. So it's not that hard in terms of collecting the data that's already being done. It's just being patient. That's probably the hardest part. So let's jump back into, before we wrap up today, how do you monitor the strains in the lab, and whether you have the right strain in the bottle, and then how do you manipulate that over time? And maybe Steve, with all the strep isolates that you're working with, you mentioned, you know, whole genome sequencing. Let's talk just a little bit briefly about that area of this pathogen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key to a successful autogenous program is kind of some ongoing surveillance, right? So once we've started a program, making sure that we're trying to keep our finger on the pulse of, you know, what else is there. You know, we at Vaxinova, we have a full service diagnostic lab that either people could submit tissues and swabs directly to us for surveillance, or certainly they can always be forwarded from the university. But really, we just, we use whole genome sequencing as our gold standard today. And that allows us to really build a library to see over time, are there changes in these bacteria? And we're looking at a whole variety of virulence factors and antimicrobial resistance genes and, really trying to document, are there subtle changes there in these populations of these bacteria that would justify making a switch? And generally, we will switch isolates in between batches of vaccines and manufacturing. With Tom, we're constantly in communication about what diagnostics he has. If something pops up, we make that switch at the time of reordering a vaccine, and away we go.
Yeah, thank you for that. So what I've heard is a lot of time and effort and some, like I mentioned, some molecular tools like whole genome sequencing that are a little more available now than they were several years ago to make sure that you have the right ones and that you're watching it over time and that you have some knowledge to why it may or may not be working.
Have you considered adding cheese to your feed? Let us help. Keys Manufacturing is a family-owned and operated business, conveniently located in central Illinois. We have been producing Pro 88 cheese powder since 1997. Pro 88 is a high-quality source of protein and milk fat. Our cheese powder is research-proven to contribute to a smooth transition in early weaning pigs, being highly palatable, increasing feed intake, as well as delivering easily digestible nutrients. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com for more information and links to our research. We look forward to helping you maximize your feed. It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. Keys Manufacturing is America's number one source for cheese meal and dairy powders for your feed. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com. Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers. Vaxinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. Visit us at vaxinova.us.com for more info. That's vaxxinova.us.com. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
Well, great. Well, we're finishing our time together here with Dr. Tom Petznik and Dr. Steve Tusanov, and we've been talking about strep psoas, how to diagnose it, and how to manage it in your herd. If you have some more questions or comments about our show, please send those to our guests or to us on your podcast platform. If you like listening to our show, please give us a thumbs up on your platform. Before we wrap up, I want to give each of you just a chance to kind of give your final thoughts and take homes when we're wrapping up this discussion about strep. And then we'll move on to our hallmark three questions. So Tom, do you want to start us off with the wrap up?
Yeah. So really appreciate the opportunity to talk about something that it never seems to get boring with strep. I think the good news that I can look all producers in the eye and say, if we do a thorough job and we put the effort towards it, we can make a huge impact on the amount of Streptococcus suis and or some of those other minor strep species within your herd, especially with vaccine. I talked earlier about the tonsils being an ecosystem, and certainly anytime we use antibiotics, it's not just the gut that gets affected, it's also the tonsils, it's all those different mucosal surfaces. And so we also eliminate probably some good strep bacteria that are not virulent and help keep everything in balance. Never forget about the importance of the environment and the things that we do on a day-to-day basis. No vaccine will be able to overcome that if we have problems with management. And then very, very clearly to me is do not give up if you still are seeing problems afterwards. It wouldn't be the first time that we uncovered that, again, that leopard lying in the weeds that we needed to add to the vaccine as well. And got that. And that really involves being really engaged with the group that you're using. You know, Steve and Chelsea Hyman and I, we spend a lot of time on the phone, in person, just really making sure we have the solution dialed in for people, selecting the adjuvant, making sure that we have the right isolates in there. And one of the big questions that Steve always asks me is, as we're trying to put other products into the vaccine or other pathogens into the vaccine, he'll say, but Tom, what's your primary problem? Let's make sure we don't get drifting away from that. Sometimes we can get real wishful and try to put the whole kitchen sink in there. And so we want to make sure that we solve the primary problem within the herd first.
And I would just add, look, we're here to help. If you're a young veterinarian with a lot of questions about where to start, you know, please look us up or lean on the mentors in your network. If you're a producer out there that just has some questions, you know, make sure to reach out and connect. And let's talk about, you know, what's all involved on putting one of these programs together. You know, trying to distill this down into a podcast that's a couple of handfuls of minutes long is quite a challenge. But always feel free to reach out and ask questions and keep looking for those answers.
Great. You're exactly right. It's a much more complex disease and process than a short podcast, but gets us started and gets us thinking about, maybe something you want to try or something that's been nagging in your herd. And so where would I start? So very good. Well, great. So we're going to move to the hallmark of our show, which is getting to know our guests just a little bit better. And we're going to ask them three questions. I'm going to ask both of our guests the questions because I think that it's fun. I always hear something new and learn something from this part. So Tom, let's start with you. What's your favorite book or resource that you use in your area of expertise?
Yeah, on a couple of the other podcasts, I've brought up some, but the one that really kind of hit me coming into this one is it's amazing to me. The resources that are available online and just by the Google searches and hey, we can all be questionable about whether AI is good or not good. There's probably a little bit of both, but it's amazing to me how much better my Google searches or whatever search engine I'm using, how much better they've gotten since that's really been adapted. It really dials me in. I find a little bit less time going to the more medicine related web engines to get that. I still get the same information, but then ultimately going back to those like PubMed, and those are really good too. But one thing that I'm going to put the point in is all that literature is voluminous, and unfortunately, it's become a little bit of a cost center for some organizations, and so be very, very careful and critical how you read your literature that's out there. What's the credibility of that? And that was really taught to me even deeper in the master's program. One of the books I'm going to be reading here in the future, I just haven't got there yet, is called Unreliable. It's by a guy named Saba Szabo, from the best that I can understand. But it's talking about his life with the fraud and the lack of reproducibility that is in some of the literature out there. And so I think it's really important. That's a great resource, but don't just take the summary and say, this is my opinion from now on.
Yeah, good advice. How about you, Steve?
For me, the book that still sits on my desk, even here next to me still, is The Old Diseases of Swine Manual. As a young veterinarian, it's just a priceless resource for at least helping you know where to maybe get started looking. You know, I still think that for the most part, the background information in that remains solid today. And like I said, I think it can really give you a good launching pad to start in as you're looking towards trying to find answers, whether it's just strep or whether it's any bug in general. I still think that Diseases of Swine Manual is a great resource to us as veterinarians.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also available online for those who don't have the physical or want the physical book anymore, which personally I do. But yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mine's all highlighted and dog-eared. And
yep. So what about a book or resource outside of vet med or epidemiology, something that's a little different?
You know, as a swine veterinarian, and no matter what part of the industry you're in, I think we spend a fair amount of time at the wheel, behind a windshield, driving to where we need to be. And for me, it's all about, it's podcasts these days. And I think it's important for us to find podcasts, too, that are in areas outside of what we focus on day to day. So find that hobby or find, you know, the whatever it is that piques your curiosity, something to just give your brain a little bit of a break after a long day of trying to figure things out. And so for me, it's podcasts. It's all related around all the hobbies and things that I have outside of my professional career.
Yeah, I agree. Tom, anything to add?
Yeah, I really like that. What Steve said there is making sure that you disconnect, even if it still indirectly applies to what you do on a day-to-day basis, if that's what you enjoy, but seek out other avenues. As far as if you're the type, though, you want to sit down with a hardcover book and you're a hard reader, there's a book by Mathieu Ricard. It's called Altruism. And it's just something that I think is a really good read for anyone. The very beginning of the book is and it's a long one, but the beginning to the middle is largely based off of kind of the concepts of altruism and in society and so forth. And then he goes into some examples towards the end of it. And it's one of those books you're going to want to go in with an open mind. You're not going to agree with everything he says. He actually goes into some things within our animal industry that he disagrees with. Some of what was really interesting about reading that was that I agree probably with some of what he's saying, but some of it just really isn't very, very factual. I'd love to meet the guy someday and introduce him to some of the stuff that we do. But at the same time, broaden your mind. And if you want to learn about it, that's a really good book.
Yeah, thank you for that advice. So our last question is, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
Yeah, for me, if I had to pick just one word for it, I still think it's a word like curiosity. You know, that person that just has that mind that keeps asking why is that and why is that and what about this, and you know, these kinds of questioning, curious, open kind of minded people, I think, are the ones that are the most resilient in our industry. That keep looking for that new answer, that new opportunity, and new way of doing something. So, yeah, you know, some days it can feel like you've taken steps backwards, but, you know, tomorrow we get up and we brush ourselves off and keep asking those curious questions, I think is really what will keep us in the game long term and keep us successful.
Yeah, it kind of keeps, sometimes we get stuck in, you know, this is how we've always done it, right? Especially those of us with a few years out in the industry. So I think it's great to have somebody ask me, why do you do it that way? What, you know, et cetera. So yep, it challenges us. Tom, how about you?
Yeah, I chose mindfulness for this particular podcast. It's just one that, you know, as I get older, and it's probably an older trait, is that as you look back and you reflect on how you reacted to things in the past, it's very quick and easy to respond with a judgment on something you hear instantaneously, and trying to, especially if it's something that offends you or challenges your core principles. So what I've seen is with really good people in lots of different industries, especially as they mature, they develop a sense of being able to listen to things that they agree with and things that they don't agree with a non-judgmental initial knee-jerk reaction, but then to absorb that and to really understand how that fits in. And so maybe a calmer approach to life, but one that I think is very well worth it.
Curiosity and mindfulness. So, well, what a great way to wrap up our discussion. Thank you so much for being my guest today on the SwineNet podcast. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tara.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.